Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuckadelics? What the fucksters? How's it going? This is Mark Maron. This is WTF. I'm in a hotel room. I'm in my hotel room studio at the Westin at the Detroit Airport. I don't think I'm ever going to get into the actual city of Detroit. I've been here three times in the past several years for one-night gigs that just don't afford me the time to get in. This is Saturday. I'm recording this. It's Monday. You're hearing it. I'm here to do the Royal Oak Music Theater. Let's just say it went great. Why not? Let's just say it went great. I just need to get this done because I'm traveling. It's been great. By the way, Rose Byrne is on the show today. And also, we got a little chat with Kevin Pollak about his new movie, this documentary he made, Misery Loves Company. It's out. It's available on VOD and iTunes. It's going to open in select theaters April 4th. I'm in it. Many comedians are in it. So, okay, this tour has been awesome. All right. I was in Madison the other night, and the interesting thing, I don't really want to toot my own horn, but the show's good. I'm entertaining. I'm in good spirits. I'm funny. But every once in a while, I'll just catch a pocket up on stage where things happen that just will never happen again. And Madison, you know, got that show. Now, I know there's more in me because I'm pretty wide open. And if there's warmth and if there's a good sort of flow between me and the audience, I want nothing more than to make something happen that's never happened before. It's the best. And right now I'm about neck deep in that new Richard Pryor biography by Scott Saul, which is amazing. And, you know, reading about Pryor and then having this opportunity to go out and do these long sets and sort of push the envelope and, you know, with Pryor in mind, you know, really sort of reading the anatomy or learning about the anatomy of his process from very early on. Like, this is the first time I've ever done a theater tour, you know, where we're doing places that seat around 1,000. Some places are bigger. I'm in Madison at the Barrymore Theater, sold the place out, and it was just one of those nights. I can't even account for why it happens, but I did almost 2 hours. Before I got on, the guy who runs the place was talking to me about people who've been through. He says, you know, Chris Hardwick was just here, and he said the same thing as you. He'd do like an hour, hour and 15. He ended up doing 2 hours. So I'm like, well, fuck. If Hardwick's going to do two, I'm going to have to do two. So that wasn't the incentive. Maybe it was the incentive, but there's something about having a perfect sort of exchange of energy with an audience where I just went out there. I just pushed things further than I pushed them. I pulled things out of the air. There was improvisation that, that surprised me. And things happened that'll never happen again. And that's been happening on most of these shows, almost all the shows. I was out in Pittsburgh, and that place was a trip. The crowd was fucking great. And there's something about Pennsylvania, man. It's heavy, man. In my mind, there's a darkness to it. I don't know if that's true. I don't know, but I feel a presence of something in Pennsylvania in general. Something I'll embrace, not something I feel negative about. But there are plenty of dates coming up. Dallas is coming up, and we got Houston and Austin and Asheville and Charleston and San Francisco and Seattle. I know Atlanta. You know, go to WTFpod.com/calendar. And check out these dates if you want to see the show. I've been hanging around after every show, meet and greeting with everybody who wants to, selling a few posters, And it's just been great. I'm thrilled to be doing comedy. I'm excited to get out there. First time in my life I've ever really felt like this, where the shit is in place, and I'm not really second guessing myself, and people are having a good time. So that's what's going on. That's my little road diary. I'm not eating well. Had my first experience with Red Robin, which I could have lived without. I could have gone through my whole life without eating a fucking Red Robin hamburger, but I did. I ate it, and I got on stage in Pittsburgh last night with a belly full of Red Robin that was just yelling at me from the inside, screaming at me from the inside. But that added to it, there's nothing like the voices of self-hate in the form of a digesting Red Robin hamburger to make a performance really fucking sing. Did I mention we have Rose Byrne on today? Did I mention that from the new movie Adult Beginners with Nick Kroll, who's been on my show a few times? Tis Baby, I believe he produced it. But Rose Byrne from Damages, you know her from. She's going to be in that new movie Spy with Melissa McCarthy. She was in Bridesmaids. She was in there's a lot of movies. She's from Australia. I'm going to talk to her, too. All right, let's talk to Kevin Pollak back in the garage.
Relaxing is wildly overrated, I think.
I just wish I could do it. Is it overrated?
Yeah. Yeah. I can detach from the mothership.
Yeah.
But I don't... At some point, I'd rather feel alive and in the thick of my life and just be more proactive about everything.
Uh-huh.
And even if I have to be proactive about relaxing,
yeah,
fine. There's still a sense of I'm doing this, right?
Right.
And I think that might be the driving factor. I'm doing this.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I think I'm full of dread. It's an anxiety issue. And after watching the movie, your movie, Misery Loves Comedy, there are certain people like that are in that movie. Everybody's in that movie. That, you know, I really connect with, you know, when in Dana, you know, the when Dana Gould's talking about the anxiety and the panic and I deal with that. I know that's one of the issues, but unlike him, like, I still think that I need to get to the source and somehow, reckon with the source. Like, I'm going to go to what's the journey I want the ring.
Yeah,
that's inside of me. That I'm going to go into the pit, yeah, and I'm going to find resolution with that thing that's causing that. With the well, I'm going to plug the anxiety well.
And how long
on my own?
How long do you think you could last once you had the ring before you were
anxious about the ring? Like, does someone have a nicer ring?
Who's going to come get the ring?
Right. Yeah. Where do I keep this ring now that I
now
have
what?
It?
Yeah. It's that great moment in the Redford film, The Candidate.
I love them. Yeah.
Where the last thing, last moment is now what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all been about this journey towards this thing.
Sure.
Without ever stopping to go ask, do I want the thing?
Yeah.
Just, I got to get the thing. So, yeah.
Well, there's still, I think what it comes down to is it's really like some version of that kind of recovery observation is that, you know, in terms of your character defects and the manifestations of those and how they affect your life, that's what's relative to, you know, the necessity of harnessing it or stopping it or managing it. Like, do I still do behavior? Am I still hurting myself by having this thing?
I think I'm at the point now where and then listening to your show religiously has driven me to my own realization.
Yeah.
About, you know what, at the end of it, and as well as in it,
yeah,
it's about being true to yourself. And yeah, if suffering,
yeah,
wildly with your own shit is being true to yourself, then stop trying to figure it out. Stop trying to cure it. Stop trying to...
Right, just accept it.
Harness it. Yeah, it makes you who you are. And why... This show has become insanely friendly to people, not just popular, but a comfort. So, yeah, if you fix it, you're fucked. I'm serious, and I don't think it's like someone who gets...
That's like saying, relax, you're doomed.
That, well, I don't... It's not like someone who's fat who gets work because they're fat.
Right,
in comedy, yeah, right? Yeah. So I don't think it's that syndrome.
Yeah.
I think it is the audience, and in the documentary, when you're talking about that moment where you're on stage and the audience is like, this is Maron, he's going to get this.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I had to include that. You understand, I had 70 hours of footage to carve a 94-minute, and no narrative, no story, no script. I had to create a narrative.
Yeah, it was interesting because
it's impossible.
It is impossible. But I think that the way you arced and, you know, finished it out, I think what it is, it's really the portrait of the comic artist. Mm-hmm. Through 70 people or however many people.
60-something, yeah.
60-something people.
Yeah, it got bigger than do you have to be miserable to be funny.
That's it
a,
did.
That's a lovely little notion of a film, but it's really 30 minutes.
Right.
You can't do 94 minutes on.
Right, no, everything's talked about. Parenting, job, work ethic, a little bit of evolving as a comic personality, the liabilities of being a comic in the real world. Mm. What else is in there?
Also, but you're watching people feign off talking about misery while attempting to talk about misery. So that when Jim Gaffigan says, he turns the question into a joke about annoyance.
Yeah.
He's clearly going for the laugh there when in fact not comfortable to talk about.
Well, yeah, he's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's more than annoyance. I think that one of the parts that stood out for me was the moment where James Brooks... Mm. Says it's about feeling alienated or whatever he said, that the uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like that, I think that really hits it, is that a lot of us are sort of like, you know, no matter who accepts us at any given point in time, we always feel a little outside.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought he was sort of smart about it without being too morose.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the more honest people got about, I think one of the things you made me think about, I don't know if you said the exact words, but what you made me think about was that our job as performers is to articulate the misery.
Yeah.
It isn't so much that we have to be miserable on stage or in front of people.
Sure.
We have to make it either universal, I think Steve Coogan talked about that, either make it universal, oh, that's happened to all of us, or make it so personal the audience doesn't have to worry about can they relate?
Yeah, they got the distance.
They're just empathetic and laughing uncontrollably.
This poor guy.
Exactly. Which is slipping on the banana peel.
Slipping on the banana peel. I don't get no respect. Lewis Black's hands.
Yes. And the fact that we had the baby picture, I don't know if you noticed, in the baby picture, he's doing a Lewis Black gesture.
Is he really?
Yes. Yeah.
Because despite what anyone says about, like, everybody has problems, yes. But not everyone is as emotionally handicapped as people who choose this profession. Sure, there are plumbers who are depressed.
Yes.
You know, but they don't, you know, they're not like on stage, you know, fixing a toilet.
It's about articulating it. You know, the misery is a universal human condition.
Well, okay, well, what was the process of this, you know, of this documentary? I know I was in it, but Jesus, how long did it take to put together?
Well, I, you know, doing one of these shows affords us a Rolodex to reach out to famous funny people.
Yeah, but also you know, you're an actor, and you've been around a long time.
Yeah, we've shared trenches, but you also have to have some interview chops to try to get these people to open up.
Right.
And there's no question that the chat show informed all of that.
Right.
But, you know, the best way to get all those famous funny people in your movie is to not pay them.
Right. Sure.
Honestly,
yeah.
If I had to pay any of them, then I'd have to deal with agents and lawyers and managers, and then I'm fucked.
Oh, yeah, can't ever do
that.
No.
So when I got to shoot these 4 weeks consecutively.
Oh, so that
who
was
am I going to get for these 4 weeks?
Right.
So you got to get a crew, and you know how it is.
Right.
Shooting your show, you have to meet these parameters.
Yeah.
So whoever was going to be available is who we were going to get.
Now, I know you dedicated the film to Robin. Did you interview him?
We were on the phone twice for almost an hour each time. He was shooting the television series at the time, and, you know, 14, 15 hour days.
Yeah.
And I had 4 5-day weeks.
Yeah.
And as much as I would like to say, well, let's just bring the crew down and talk to him in his trailer.
5 minutes, yeah.
It just wasn't physically possible for him, his producers, his production, and mine.
Well, when I saw his name at the end, I was like, you know, I wonder, even if you had that footage.
Right.
You know, it would be hard to decide.
Well, I took out a moment. First of all,
whether to put it in.
He passed while I was editing. which is why ultimately I decided to dedicate the film to him. And clearly, it wasn't something I would have done if he were alive.
Yeah, right,
that's
right.
Painfully obvious.
Yeah.
But because he had been such a mentor of mine when I came on the scene in San Francisco, he had just become a made man, but spent all his time in San Francisco for stand-up. He, of course, would work out at the Comedy Store,
sure,
but he could not wait to get back to San Francisco and knight a few of us, Slayton and a couple of us that were around
the Holy City Zoo.
Yeah, and so...
I love Slayton. God, he's so good in your fucking movie.
Oh.
Like,
there's a rawness and a nakedness and a beautiful...
But he's okay with himself.
Oh, that's the thing. It's one of the reasons I wanted to include him and a couple of others was these people should also be famous to you.
Yeah.
And if you're a comedy junkie, you know who they are. And if you're not, you don't.
But. Yeah.
So the flighty nature of fame and success, not based on talent.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
Yeah,
it's heartbreaking.
There's no rules or fairness.
Yeah.
I used to have a mantra, Chachi's a millionaire.
Yeah.
Because this this kid, 12 or 14, walked onto a set of a famous sitcom and became on the cover of 17 magazine.
Yeah.
Not based on anything else,
mm-hmm,
talent-wise or anything. And no disrespect to who that person is.
Yeah.
That's just the way show business works.
Right.
Yeah. There's no...
It's horrifying.
No correct path. No rule book.
Yeah. And then that's why now when people talk to me, it's like, look, I don't know.
No.
Once in my life, I had good cosmic timing.
Yeah.
You know, and I was ready to do what was necessary.
Yeah.
You know, things synced up and I was ready for the job.
But if I may, you also began with being proactive.
Right.
That's where it started. You said, fuck everyone else and everything else. I'm going to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though you had done that in your stand-up.
But let's preface that with, what am I going to do?
Well,
what am I going to do?
You've already prefaced it. But I just keep coming back to, that's the only advice I can give.
Right.
Is don't wait for anyone to figure this out for
you. Yeah, they're not your
Jump
parents.
Jump the fuck in.
Yeah, show business is not your mommy.
Yeah, put in your 10,000 hours immediately and then talk to me.
Yeah, no, but there's so much good stuff in the movie. The weird thing, the experience I had with some people, it's like, I don't like listening to this guy talk in person. You know, so like, you know,
no reason to name names.
No reason to name names.
You know,
I don't want to hear what this guy is saying about anything.
Sure.
But, you know, good guy.
Sure, sure.
Good guy. So... doesn't matter who
just
it is.
A terrific guy. I am the same way. I just came from a meeting with some people who foolishly think they'd like me to direct their film, and they started talking casting choices.
Yeah.
And they said, what about this guy? And I would like to direct their film.
Yeah.
I don't want to alienate them at this meeting, but I also have to be true to my school,
mm-hmm,
which is difficult for me. I'm too much of a people pleaser, clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, my act is 9 seconds from Carrot Top. In the sense that it's tricks. It's parlor tricks. It's just tricks. So, you know, it took me forever to have a voice
in your
and
defense,
say something.
Right, but in your defense, you don't accessorize your impressions. You know,
that's right.
You don't put the hat on.
That's right.
But you know.
I carried the Columbo coat the first 9 years of my act from gig to gig.
You did.
And actually put it on.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then
this is 30 years ago.
But you let it go.
I sure did.
You let the coke go.
And also, for the last 10 years or more, I tortured the audience by insisting on doing straight stand-up for the first 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Before they get a single voice.
Like classic Pollock stand-up or newer stuff?
There's no such thing as newer stuff, is there? You mean a point of view on what's happening in my life?
Sure.
Yeah, that makes no sense. I'll talk about anything but that.
Yeah.
I leave that to the professionals.
Sure.
And so I, when meeting with these people and they suggested this actor, I ultimately said yeah, just not a fan. And it was that same thing you were talking about, which is some people, I don't care if you don't like their face.
Yeah.
I don't care if you don't like the way that they keep their chin higher than it needs to be when they speak. There's just something in their essence that I want to set their face on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, there's those.
Sure. This would be the time where I could, like, you know,
go
cleverly reference the people in the movie, like, from a list and act like I don't even have the list. And I could, like, go, like, Stephen Merchant's in it. Dana Gould is in it.
Judd Apatow, by the way, I thought was a revelation. Yeah.
He was very articulate. James Brooks was in there. Jim Jefferies, Kathleen Madigan, Louis Black, Penn Jillette, Greg Proops. One of the high boys for me was that horrifying picture of Proops back in the day.
Yes.
Like, what was that?
The photos people chose to share with me.
I could not believe that
Judd
photo.
Judd Apatow in the clown outfit from his youth.
Well, that was cute. I mean, the kids' pictures are one thing, but that was proofs that, like, what was he doing?
Yes.
Like, he looked like he was, he was in the David Bowie entourage.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Like, they were doing a Bowie version of the Smothers Brothers. That photo looked like.
But no, but the other one of him solo with the hat on the side.
Like, oh, yep. That was 19, probably 81.
You remember him looking like that?
Sure. That was the look. Yeah, you had the...
Because then eventually he went with the horn rims and the other thing. I met him in probably 90 when he was doing that already. Yeah. So you're saying 81. Probably looking like that. Yeah, because by the end of the 80s, he was other thing.
We had to lean into greed is good at that point and wear a suit.
Yeah, it was still groovy in 81.
Yeah.
Who else? Who am I missing?
Well, there's just so many.
Saget?
Amy Schumer and...
Jimmy Norton?
Yeah. Maria Bamford. Jimmy Norton's Bamford. Also wildly naked, as he should be, with his
always.
Truth. And yeah. And also the Cinderella,
O&A?
The pumpkin.
O&A?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was also a thing in post where I was like, huh.
How do I let Anthony look like a human? Is that the question?
Yes.
Do I allow this nice part of him to shine given the situation?
Yeah.
He did. He had a funny side, dude.
But I mean, I edited for like almost 10 months because it was a puzzle that I could have done that for 5 years. So much time had passed that people's lives had changed.
Right. Christopher Guest.
Yeah.
And Martin Short.
By the way, Martin Short talking about being so bitter he couldn't.
That was great.
Be happy for. That's a side of him I don't know that we've seen. You know, so is that.
But it wasn't bitter. It was.
Incapable of celebrating somebody's
happy. Jealous.
Yeah, jealous. Yeah. Absolutely jealous. Yeah.
I love that story.
Breakdown corner. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know that feeling. Because what you want to do is cry. You'd like to show up at that party with your successful friends, start weeping and go, why am I not?
Yeah.
Like you, why can't I be?
That's the unfortunate human condition too, though. And I think that's why Facebook is a multi-billion-dollar business. And that's why the thesis for the film grew to children suffer from, hey, look at me disease because they're children. They need attention. Mm-hmm. Adults clearly suffer from that. That's why Facebook is a multi-billion-dollar business. Mm-hmm. You have a page, you're somebody.
Yeah.
Who fucking chooses that as a career, as a devote your life to a profession that is, hey, look the fuck at me?
Yeah, I mean, I get that. But, you know, I think that, like, outside of the psychology of that, it seemed like most people, you know, have an experience with show business. They see, like, you know, some people see a fireman, they want to be a fireman.
No.
You know, and those of us, for whatever reason, you know, just think it's amazing that, you know, you can get on stage and be an entertainer, you know.
To begin with.
Yeah. I don't.
When you said in the film, forgive me for interrupting, but when you said in the film, I saw these guys, comedians.
They had
something to say.
Well, they had something to say, and also they had an angle. They had a point of view, and they could handle things. They could handle things. Right.
You said that.
They had a handle on it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
So they, great.
But that was
They made life seem doable.
Right.
Yeah, for
like,
you.
Like, you explained it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's hilarious, and like, right. Oh, that's what that is. Oh, yeah. Right, exactly. You know, like,
so
okay.
For you, it was this or be a professor.
It would be a professor, right? But it was. I think what appealed to me was the point of view. Like, you know, like, who the hell am I?
Yeah.
What do I think about things? And they, like, comedians, you know, good ones, they definitely know those two things.
Yes. Yes. I had only one teacher all through school who I connected with, and it was because here's what you need to do to shape your mind.
Yeah. Please tell me.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, oh, thank God.
So telling me what about the history of anything. Just tell me how I'm going to move forward in life.
Without disintegrating and disappearing in every conversation.
Yeah. I snuck a few
Tom
in
Hanks.
There. Yeah. Yeah. Tom Hanks and Larry David.
Tom Hanks was great. Larry David was great.
I stole those beats, those pieces from the chat show. Obviously, the backdrop in both of them was just horrendous. That black, awful black backdrop.
Oh, I didn't really notice.
Good. But I had to include them because when I was shooting the film, those interviews came up. So I just did the double release for them and let them know I'm going to use this in the film. And then came to a section within the body of the interview for the chat show where I devoted it to
that you knew it was coming.
Line of questions
right.
in keeping with the film.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, and that worked out.
And getting Tom Hanks
to
say 53 years of self-loathing darkness.
That was surprising.
Are you kidding me?
Loved it.
Yeah.
If you're a comic, the moment after, you're like, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, but that he found stand up to be like crystal meth, you know, and the when he was gearing up to do Punchline.
I don't acknowledge that anymore. I don't like. I don't acknowledge the rush of getting the laugh. For me, it's sort of the broader rush of feeling connected.
I don't think it's getting the laugh either. I think it's being on stage and literally being in control of the ride for an hour.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
But and also
is.
Being like having that connect, you know, like yeah. that one mind thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's attributed to your act and a few other people's. That's yeah. not everyone's experience.
Right, right.
To be able to connect on that level. But I do know what you're talking about. When yeah. it happens, there's no greater drug,
well, it's the best.
Drug
it's, yeah.
than that.
Yeah. And like recently I've just been like, because I've been a little kind of nervous about stand-up and like I keep doing it, but like I'm like, oh, Christ, I fucking, what am I going to do? What's it? And I got a lot of material, but like lately I've been, like I took some turn like last week. Like, you know, all of a sudden you realize like, I've been doing this my whole life.
Yeah,
I'm not an open micer. Right. What am I worried about? Well, what do you think's going to happen out there?
I think the dread yeah. that you're sensing.
It's how I prepare.
May be not only true to your school, but I think it also is bigger than that. I think it's also, I know how good this can be. I know those moments when it all clicks and it all right. works and I make the connection. And the dread of having to get to that place successfully again and the responsibility of that
right, right,
and
yeah.
the expectations
yeah.
of that you put on yourself
is, a little crazy.
Is fueling the dread.
Yeah, I try to turn all that shit off. And it's naturally happening to me as I age. Like, I can't keep it all in my head.
But it's that weird cure-all, too, when you actually get on the stage. You know, the old adage.
Right, when you just feel like you know right away whether it's what kind of night it's going to be.
Yeah.
Lately, it's like I have this joke that, you know, it's sort of buried or sometimes I don't do it. And then I started to realize because I'm doing sets at the store where I'm just kind of punching it out, just trying to, you know, do tight sets to, you know, keep that relationship going to work out. And I moved this one joke to the open. Like, I was like, there was a time, man, where it all hinged on that opening joke. Like, you know, you're going to, you got to have that strong opening joke. And I hadn't really thought about that in a long time. You know, but in a club situation, in a 15-minute set, I was like, why don't you put that one up front? And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I know the joke I'm going to open with. And I, like, a lot of times, like, I didn't. I'm like, what the fuck am I going to?
Well, when
with.
You do a bigger venue, they're you giving you the it. First two, yeah. 3 minutes,
sure.
and they're settling in, and they're, yeah. they've paid a babysitter. It's a whole different experience,
right.
and you go into a tight room with 37 people,
yeah.
and you've got to bang in the yeah. first 15 right. seconds to relax everyone's sphincter.
Right, yeah. right, and after the person before you just killed.
Yeah, oh,
and
well.
And like, so the elation of like, wow, that joke works as
I
an
know
opener.
My opening joke.
Yeah.
yes.
yeah.
Yes, I've spent far too much time.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to the point where I would come up with just a little throwaway as I'm walking out and taking the mic.
Right.
It's something as simple as please be seated.
Yeah.
To a sitting audience, just as a way to
yeah.
put everything, you know, it's just a...
That moment.
Yeah.
That moment.
Yeah. It's right.
Well, lately what I've been doing is I'll take the mic stand and I'll bend down and mm-hmm. I'll put my foot literally on the table
yeah.
of the front row and I'll lean down and I'll just say, I'm going to Bono the fuck out of this set.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
And I just hold it.
Give him a visual.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The idea that you found an opening joke and it actually resonated. Oh my God, this is an opening joke.
I remember
joke.
That. Yeah, I remember like, yeah, you used to want to, you wanted to get right in.
That's the greatest for the rest of mankind.
Yeah.
That would be the first time you found the hidden Easter egg that no one else could find.
And you get to do that over and over again. But I just, like, it'd been a long time since I thought that way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I'm just going to go up and kind of, you know, like, to like, and it's specifically a club set mentality where you're like, I just want to get in.
Oh, yeah. You probably went away from that purposely. I'm not going to go out there and have
yeah, I don't care.
Joke.
Like, you know, but like at the Comedy Store, it's like, and it's packed and it's sort of like, do I want to bungle through?
No, you don't. You don't, and also you're not doing that much time.
Right, and they'll shut down on you, that room. Oh. In that OR, man, it's like if you're not hitting, it's like they're not going. They're not, no sympathy there.
Listen, this kind of talk hopefully is what the purpose of the film, the documentary, was yeah. to, if you're a comedy junkie in yeah. particular, if you're a comedy nerd, as mm-hmm. we love, one of the things written was a masterclass on what it really means to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So at best, I guess that's...
That's great.
If so, if it's your thing.
Well, congratulations. And I do need to tell you that, like, you know, what do we... Okay, so how long do you think I talked to you in the garage for that interview that you took pieces of for the movie? Probably a couple hours, right?
Oh, no, just a little over an hour.
A little over an hour. All right, well, we've talked for 33 minutes. I'm looking for a good eight.
Yeah. Do you think you have it? I'll take 11, but if you need to only make it eight.
No, I loved it. I was proud to be part of it. And,
you know, thanks, man. It really meant a lot to me that you were a part of it, because I'll be honest with you, there were very few people who... I wanted famous people, of course, and yeah. I wanted people who would open up, but very few people I felt like would get to the heart of it for real.
Yeah.
And so Kevin Smith and Penn Jillette and and Judd and Jimmy Norton, and there were just a handful that I knew would really...
Yeah, yeah.
Say it.
Yeah.
So thanks.
Good luck with the whole process.
Yeah. Well, it's already succeeded. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, getting into Sundance and then the Tribeca sale, and then we just sold the foreign, so I win. I'm done.
You're done?
Go see it.
Oh, that's it.
Please.
So that doesn't matter to you, though.
Well, it matters because you want people to come up to you and say, I saw the thing. It was good.
Yeah, you did a good thing. Yeah, you did a good job on the thing.
The financiers, everybody's happy, and I get to do it again. And that's, you know, those are the victories, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. You keep working.
Yeah.
So go check out that movie, all right? Misery Loves Comedy. Now, what do we got? This is a nice, quiet hotel room. I always wonder if people hear me shouting this shit out in the hallway, if they're like, why is he yelling into the phone like he's on a radio show? That's part of it, man. It's part of the job. That's why Keith Richards said, it's the job, buddy. It's the job. So occasionally we get these opportunities to interview big movie people, and Rose Byrne is here. Well, she's in the garage. Well, she was in the garage. Well, we're going to the garage now. Let's enter it that way. Her new film, Adult Beginners, is funny. Bobby Cannavale, is that how you say his name? Is in it. He's funny. He's always good. Nick Kroll's in it. He's good. Rose Byrne is in it. She's good. That opens this Friday, April 24th, and also look for her in Spy with Melissa McCarthy, which opens on May 22nd. And now you can listen to me talk to her back in the garage.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort, auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Do you do voiceovers ever?
No, I wish.
You never
it's
have.
A good paycheck.
Yeah. Never done any cartoons? You've
I
never
did
been?
One line on American Dad.
That was it?
And they didn't ask me back. No, but yeah, that was it.
It's amazing how it seems so effortless that you can talk with an American accent. And
oh, thank you.
But, like, is it hard? Like, because, like, if I tried to speak like an Australian or a British person, it would take everything I had to focus on that. Is it the same going the other way?
Sometimes is, but we grew up in Australia with a lot of American television. So the vernacular is really right. Familiar sound.
Yeah.
And I've gotten better at it. Yeah. Well, I think actually lately I've gotten worse.
Really?
I don't know why.
I just watched, I watched a new movie, Adult Beginners.
Yeah.
I watched it.
Oh, great.
Sat there and watched the whole thing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'd have something to talk about.
Good. Well, I would love to talk about it.
You would?
Yeah.
See, the dog is sometimes part of the show.
Oh, great.
It's not even my dog.
We started, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We're almost done, we're apparently. we're just about out of time.
What sort of dog have you got?
It's not my dog. It's my neighbor's dog.
Oh, sorry.
So if it becomes a real problem, I'm just going to have to go shut that window. No, but I watched it, and it was very funny. And I noticed that a lot of times that you sort of play a straight person for mm-hmm. goofballs.
Yes.
That's your task. Do you ever want to be the goofball?
The goofball. Sure. I mean, I have had roles where, like, in this movie, Get Him to the Greek, I played a really...
I saw that. That was funny.
Obnoxious
yeah.
pop star who was very wild and very, you know,
yeah.
real narcissist. And
yeah.
Basically a female version of Russell Brand.
Right.
Who was so ridiculous and
yeah.
self-absorbed.
Yeah, and same with the one in Bridesmaids. You were sort of like snotty.
She was a little more uptight, though. Like, Jackie Q was just wild. Whereas Helen was so preoccupied with what people thought of her.
But I thought that the adult beginners movie was very touching. You know, I'm a grown man with no children. I kind of blew it. So, you know, it hit a lot of buttons with me. And I know Nick Kroll pretty well. He's been on the show a couple of times.
Oh, great.
So, you know, he's got to be pretty fun to work with.
He is. And he produced it and came up with the story and then took it to these writers, Liz Flahive and Jeff Cox. So it's his baby. The whole thing is really very much, he's like...
Nick's?
Yeah, absolutely. It was his, you know, and he's pre-produced it with Mark Duplass and Ross Katz.
Duplass.
The Duplass brothers.
Yeah, the kings of Hollywood.
Yeah, they had like, we were at South by Southwest. And
with that movie.
Yeah, and they had like so many films there.
Yeah, I know. You know? And then they got like a 90-picture deal with Netflix, right? 90 or 100
really?
Pictures.
I didn't know that.
Not 90, maybe 3 or 6 or something.
Well, yeah.
It's good, though.
That's great. No, they're ubiquitous.
Yeah, yeah. I think I know what that word means. It sounds right. Does that mean
they're
all
everywhere.
Over?
They're everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I had Mark in here. Yeah, Mark. I don't know the other one. He seemed like they have their shit together, which annoys me.
Yeah.
Yeah, people who have their shit together in general, I find disconcerting. Like, I don't understand how
they're doing okay. I wouldn't.
Well, yeah, I mean, sure, I can do that stuff. You know what I mean? But, like, you know, he's one, like the Duplass guys, you look in their eyes and you're like, they're solid. Yeah, you know, like, I don't necessarily think that someone looks in my eyes and they're like, that's a comforting chap. And your real boyfriend was your husband.
Yes, my real boyfriend was my husband.
Bobby
Cannavale.
Yeah, he's great. I always like seeing him.
Thank you.
I remember seeing him a long time ago. Was he maybe in the, he was a New York guy, right? Still is a New York guy.
Yep.
He's maybe in the first season of Louis, or did he do Louis, one of Louis' short films?
He's done a few of Louis, yeah. He's done a few of the shorts and a few episodes.
Right, I remember him back from the shorts.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Because I used to live in New York.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yep, he used to know Louis for a while.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. So, all right, now let's go through the life because it's, you know, Australians kind of fascinate me. I talked to Melanie Lynskey. She's from New Zealand, though.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, but I've met her before. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys should be friends.
They're close.
They're just like,
you know, New Zealand and Australia, closer than New Zealand and Australia and America.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like in New Zealand, you can kind of go like, I'm going to go to New Zealand for the weekend, just take a plane, right? Like an hour, right?
2.5.
2.5?
Yeah.
So it's way out there.
Yeah.
So we're,
I know. It's like going to Miami from New York.
Right. But it's like, did you do that growing up? Did you go to vacation in New Zealand?
Never went to New Zealand.
Ever in your life?
No.
No, they have sheep and stuff.
I know.
Exotic wool.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it's all there. Peter Jackson is always there shooting something.
I went to Queenstown once in the South Island and shot a commercial and it was stunning. It's a ski town and it was summer. But, you know, the landscape is just breathtaking.
And where'd you grow up in Australia?
I'm from the city. I lived in an area called Balmain, which is a sort of near the harbour, but it was a very working class neighbourhood, and my parents moved there in the 70s. And it's very close to the centre of the city.
In Sydney?
In Sydney, yep.
Well, Sydney's got that beautiful beaches.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's a good city.
It's beautiful.
It's good
food. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful food.
Yeah.
Weather. I mean, it is a stunning place live.
Your parents moved there when?
They're both from Sydney, and they lived there their whole lives.
Really?
Yep, yep. Pretty much. And now they moved to Tasmania, which is an island off the coast of Australia. It's part of Australia.
I don't know why that doesn't sound good to me.
Tasmania.
Maybe it's just a name. It does. Are there people? Are they the first among the first ones? What's going on down there?
Yeah, what is going on down there? So it's gorgeous.
Oh,
it is. It does have a lot of colonial heritage, you know.
Bad stuff.
Like the bad stuff. Yeah, there's a very famous jail there called Port Arthur jail, where a lot of the, you know, it was a jail for convicts. So when
wasn't all of Australia convicts initially?
They were. Well, white Australia. Yeah, we were all, you know, they were sent there on the boats to eradicate a class of people from England, and then they were sent to live out their sentences in Australia, and then they got to hang out with the people who, you know, put them in jail after they were done with their sentences.
Right. So the people that end up in jail after they've already come to Australia at a certain point at that time must have been really shitty people.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I guess so. Yeah, then you get to hang out. It's so weird. It was such a weird experiment.
Do you know your family heritage?
No, I would love to. I would love to know. And I was going to do that show, Who Do You Think You Are, at one point, but I couldn't figure out the schedule. But I would love to know my heritage.
It'd be nice to have a show do it. They'll take care of it.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of getting off my own, laurels and my own ass and doing it or whatever.
Getting on that website or whatever.
Yeah. There's a good thing now. A girlfriend was telling me that you can just send your saliva.
Yeah, for the genetic thing.
Yeah. Well, that's the genetic thing.
Right, so then you get sort of a breakdown.
Yeah.
And it's very surprising.
Yeah, she was surprised.
Yeah why? Surprised. What was her surprise gift inside of her genes?
She was like mostly, she thought she was mostly like Russian, Eastern European, and she found out she had some African in her.
Don't we all?
I think we probably do. It's not such a surprise, let's face it.
So when did you, what kind of background do you come from? What did your folks do?
My mum was a homemaker until we were probably, till I started school. And then she worked at a Aboriginal primary school,
the indigenous people. Yeah.
Culture and population in Australia. And so she worked at a school there in the administrative office for a long time, a really great school called Darlington.
In Sydney?
Yeah, in Sydney, in a place called Redfern, which is a very Aboriginal suburb.
Oh, so it was like, it was segregated to a degree.
No, that's a harsh word. Right. I don't think segregated, but just like...
They had their neighborhood.
Yeah, it was like a neighborhood, really. And mm-hmm. So it was a priority school for that, which was great. So they, they very much respected the culture and didn't try to sort of... There's a lot of different, in Aboriginal culture, it's not polite to look your elders in the eye. Whereas for us, it's very much you have to look people in the eye. So they don't make them do that, for instance,
Oh, so she had to kind of learn the social rules.
Yeah, she did. It was really interesting. So she was really on the front line, which was cool. Yeah, we all went to the school a lot growing up.
To that school?
I didn't attend the school because I was outside of the zone. But, but we would go in there and see her a lot. And my dad ran a company, his own company. He worked mainly for Village Roadshow doing like statistics. So if they wanted to build a new cinema, he would go and do the surveys of the area, like ask, interview people, would you go to this cinema if it was filmed? So we all worked for him. We all did the phone surveys.
And that's a movie company? A theater company?
Village Road so is like Lowe's or something like that. So he would work for them.
So he'd go do recon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like statistical recon work. But he was a mad fanatic horse better. Bet on the horses.
So he had a gambling problem.
So he also had a gambling problem.
You put that very nicely. Oh, he just loved those horses.
I guess. But we never lost the house or anything like that because he had the job. He had a regular job. But he loves numbers.
He does.
That's my point. Yeah.
So he just likes the handicap.
Crunches the numbers.
Oh, yeah. how much of that horse eats.
Exactly.
What he went,
what's the odds of this thing and that.
So do you spend a lot of time at the track as a kid?
I did, yeah. I went to the track quite a bit.
That's good. That's a healthy upbringing. Because you don't know better. It's like, come watch the horses. Daddy's going to put those life on the line, money-wise.
Yeah. I think my mom said never marry a punter at one point.
And a punter is a...
A punter is a better.
Oh.
What do you say in America?
Gambler.
Gambler. Yeah, right. So punter is...
Yeah. Oh, really? So she said that.
Yeah, she said that to me. She was sort of half-joking, I think, right. But she did say it.
How many brothers and sisters you got?
I'm the youngest of four, so I've got sister, brother, me.
Wow.
Yeah.
And are any of them in show business?
My brother is not really. My brother's a musician and a photographer. He has a really incredible, I'm just going to promote him a little bit. He does a great Instagram following. He's a photographer. So he's at George_Byrne, BYRNE. And he has about 30,000 followers now, maybe more. Beautiful prints. He takes kind of moody, beautiful prints of LA.
Oh, he's here? He's here?
Yeah, he lives in Silver Lake.
Oh, did you go see him?
Yeah, we saw him this morning. I went down to the printing shop with him. But they're gorgeous photos. I'll show you when we're done here.
Okay.
I'll show you. They're really beautiful. So he's here, and my sister is a painter, Alice, and lives in Melbourne, and my other sister, Lucy, works for the Australian Council of the Arts, and she lives in Sydney.
So you're all kind of in the arts.
So they are sort of all artistic, but my parents weren't.
How'd that happen?
We grew up in Balmain, which is sort of like an old drinking little village peninsula that was full of artists.
Oh, really?
So I think Well, somehow, I don't know. They don't know.
Do you remember
either.
Them around the artists?
Well, like,
did
I mean,
your parents have friends? Did you have some strange experience with an acting? You know, like, did you go to a play? What happened?
Like, I started going to acting school when I was 8 because my sister's best friend, Rosie Fisher, who's now one of my dear friends, she told me to go, and there was a lot of kids in my neighborhood who went. And
to acting school?
Yeah, to this little acting school.
Just course. For fun?
For fun, yeah.
And so fun. All the kids were there doing yeah. little plays.
Yeah, like really barely a play, more like games. Because mm-hmm. I was 8, I was so little.
8.
Yeah, I was.
What do you learn as an actor? Were you learning method at 8? Were you doing
Strasbourg?
Meisner exercises Strasbourg. At 8.
Sense memory. Mm-hmm. Remember when the cat died? Remember when?
What a crying 8-year-old.
I wouldn't give my, you know, she wouldn't give me the lolly or whatever. No, more like pretend you're a tree. Pretend you're, you know.
That's
like,
good. Sort of the same thing.
More or less.
A little more basic.
Exactly.
That's honoring the emotional construct of a child.
Exactly.
Pretend you're a dog. Easy. But you stuck with it, huh?
I stuck with it, man. For better or worse. I did.
Well, when did you start? Like, how did it go? So you were in there at 8 and then kept going?
I was very shy. I was really quiet. Yeah. Quite shy. And then I loved it. Loved going to class and kept going. And then a casting director came once scouting for, like, kids for a film. And I got a part in this film because of this scout. And then
how old were you?
13.
Oh, so you're in for a while. So you were a shy kid, and acting enabled you to do something, to get out of yourself.
I think so.
Yeah.
Probably that's a pretty classic story.
Yeah, kind of.
But, yeah.
Are you shy now?
So I can be in certain situations.
Yeah. So 13, you get a part in a movie.
Yeah, so I got this part in a movie with Sandra Bernhard, of all
really?
People. Yeah.
And she was probably, what, in her 20s?
She was in her early 30s, probably at that point, Sandra.
She's been in here.
Has she?
Sure.
She's fabulous.
Yeah,
she's
long time awesome. Ago now.
She was with this gorgeous, her girlfriend at the time was this beautiful South American supermodel called Patricia Valquez. Oh, she was gorgeous.
Kind of remember that.
Stunning. And so we did this. She came to Australia and did this film called Dallas Doll.
What was the plot of that? What's the pitch?
The pitch of that is a American woman sort of invades this Australian family and convinces them to spend all their money to open a golf course and country club.
I kind of remember that movie.
Bizarre little
Yeah, like
film.
Weird. Who the hell directed that? Whose big idea was that thing?
Ann Turner wrote and directed it.
Uh-huh.
So that was, yeah, and once I did that, then I was on like casting lists. So I would
in
go
Australia.
In Australia. And I would go in and audition for things. But I finished school. I went to university and so on.
University.
University.
We call them colleges.
I know.
I like the difference. Somebody, I was at a hotel in Boston the other night, and someone said the lifts are around the corner. I'm like, no, they're not. Not in this country. Those are elevators, my friend. I'm not transitioning to lift.
I say to my boyfriend Bobby all the time, get off the footpath or come on the footpath, and he's like, what? What are you talking about? And I'm like, the footpath. And he's like, it's a sidewalk.
That's happened more than once?
All the time. We have a saying 60-40. He understands about 40% of what I say.
That sounds perfect.
The rest of the time, he's like, what?
What?
Exactly. What? It's probably why we're still together.
Have you figured out the percentage that he's not listening? What's that?
Yeah, that's the next statistic we need to come up with.
Well, it's interesting that you worked with him in that movie because, you know, I actually didn't know it until after I watched the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That you two were together, and it sort of makes sense how you know, emotionally available he was. I mean, I'm sure he could do it as an actor, you know, but there was something. There is another dimension to it. It seemed.
Yep. Oh, good. Yeah, I feel like you can. I mean, with
we can really make out and stuff.
You can really make out. B, it's very economic choice for the producer because they get one carpool to take us to work. So it's like,
but the emotional shorthand is there, and it's sort of like I think that sometimes. You know, if the script isn't perfect, that's hard to manufacture, you know, a history with somebody else.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what we're interested about doing. We've actually done 3 jobs together, and this script was we both loved it. I read it first, and I read that role of Danny, and I thought, God, Bobby would be great for this. And then it ended up, they had actually written it for him, so it was quite fortuitous.
It's a tricky bit of business that, like, there are some turns in that movie that are a little difficult emotionally, and I really wonder... about the reality of certain situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, like if what happened in the movie happened in real life,
yeah,
could you be forgiving?
Yeah, it's a big... Well, I don't know. In my life, I've never had to deal with that. I don't have a family. I don't have kids.
Sure.
So that's a whole different addition to
a
question like that. But it definitely happens.
It sure does.
We both know that.
At that time.
Forgiveness happens.
At that time. Oh, forgiveness happens.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like that.
I
don't want to spoil the movie.
Yeah, that happens too. But
how long have you been with him?
Yeah. We've been together for about two and a half years.
Oh, okay.
3 years.
Pretty. So it's still good.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, he's fun.
He seems like a good guy.
He's a great
Seems solid.
Guy.
I liked him in that Woody Allen movie, the last movie.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't she amazing, Kate?
Kate was amazing. Dice was amazing.
Yeah.
Everybody was
Sally
pretty
Hawkins.
Good. Yeah, she was great. She's British, right?
Yeah, English, yeah.
All right, so getting back to
Louis
this.
Too.
Yeah, Louis was good too. Louis was sweet. You know, he can be sweet. You know, in terms of like sometimes when he plays a character that isn't him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought that was a pretty lovable character until you know the turn at the end.
When he was
kind of being a dick.
Yeah, then he totally didn't show up. Yeah.
So what were the other movies you worked with him on?
We did Annie.
Recently.
The recent Annie.
I missed it. I missed it with everybody else.
I'll send you a DVD.
People liked you in it, though.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, that's what I heard. Did you get some bad press?
I think I stopped reading the reviews after a while.
Well, that was for the movie. I mean, like, that movie came and went. I was like, what's happening? And then it's gone. It's so weird, man. It's so weird when those billboards hang around.
I know.
Of failures. You know, like,
I know, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's like an exhibit of what didn't work.
I know, like ghosts hanging over the street.
Ghosts of failure.
God.
Whatever ones you do with him.
And so we did that, and then we did Spy.
Uh-huh.
This movie with Melissa McCarthy.
Is that her movie?
Yeah. So it's Melissa and me and Jason Statham and Bobby and Jude Law.
Is that one that her husband wrote?
No. Paul Feig wrote and directed it, who did Bridesmaids and The
Paul
Heat.
Paul Feig. Yeah, he's great. Yeah. He's been in here.
Has he been in here? I was going to say, if he has.
They've all been in here.
Yeah.
So you feel more comfortable now? You feel like it's
No, I knew they had been. I looked at you.
Because I project and I thought, like, you walked in and you're like, what is this? What have I agreed to do? This is ridiculous. This is house.
I think my resting face looks a little sullen, but it's not, I promise.
Well, you know, it's weird when you're like a movie actress, you know, people just sit there and project things onto you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, maybe that's it.
She must be like this.
Yeah.
It's all very intimidating sometimes.
Yeah, right.
But I feel better. I feel okay about it. You see,
I do that to people.
Sure, of course.
Watching them.
That guy's got to be horrible.
Whatever you want onto them. Don't you? That's why, like, Kate Moss is so great, because she's so like...
Yeah.
Ultimate model, because it's like anything you want.
And still. It's astounding.
Yeah, she's
still like got to be going on in like 20, 30 years.
Yeah, and she's
still
just,
looks great.
She just is like unstoppable. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So when you were coming up in Australia, I mean, they've got their own little film world and TV world. That's, like, it seems that, you know, if you have talent, eventually you'll get your turn down there.
I mean, it's only 25 million people in Australia. It's tiny, you know, as you know. And they're all on the coast, like
80%
of the population is all on the coast.
What's in the middle?
I mean...
Have you been to the middle?
I haven't.
You've never been to the middle?
I know.
You've never been to New Zealand?
I have. I've been to New Zealand.
Just to shoot.
I did go to Queenstown to shoot the Sony commercial. But I haven't. I haven't been to Uluru, which is a beautiful rock in the middle of Australia in the desert. I haven't been to Alice Springs.
I made the mistake with Nick Cave to assume that all you Australian celebrities know each other. We had a rocky start, me and Nick Cave. Rocky start in the conversation.
Did he warm up?
Kinda.
Yeah.
Do you know him?
I don't. I don't at all.
You a fan?
No. I mean, I respect... I don't know his music that well either, no. But
what
I
music
love some
do
of
you
his
know?
Stuff. What do I know?
Yeah, what do you know, Rose? Who'd you grow up liking? What did you rock out to?
What did I like?
As a kid.
I copied my brothers and sisters quite a lot. So,
older brothers
you know,
and sisters.
Yeah, so I copied what they were listening to a
sure,
lot.
Sure, sure.
So that was, you know,
reggae
and,
you
know, old music like Zeppelin and Jimmy
Zeppelin.
Hendrix.
Zeppelin, that's
and,
timeless music.
You know, all those
that's
sorts
not
of things.
Old.
That,
yeah.
And then I really got into techno.
Did you?
I'd go to raves and went to, like, a lot of techno and stuff like that.
When you were a kid?
Teenager.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you'd, like, you know, take E
yeah,
and
yeah.
go... Say it.
Oh no, I never went that far. But I did. Oh, I did go to the rave parties and I'm trying to think of like the DJ Carl Cox and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I woke up one day and I was like, this is terrible.
Oh, really?
I don't want to go to these anymore.
But yeah. But it was a thing to do, right? Just dance all night
totally.
And wear silly hats.
Being a teenager, dancing. And then in my 20s, I really got into the Beastie Boys.
That's good. All right, you leveled
really
off.
Good.
Yeah.
And then heavy into folk. Like then I started, you know.
Later, after the 20s?
I guess so, like Cat Power and.
Oh, you got a little sad, nostalgic
Amelia
for your youth.
Torini and.
Your heart grew heavy.
Yeah, all that pretty earnest.
Is that when
stuff.
You weren't in a relationship or.
Oh, no, I was. I was.
A troubled relationship. Difficult.
I was.
With an actor?
An actor-writer. Yep.
How long were you with that guy?
7 years.
Was it just a horror show?
Yep. No, it wasn't.
Anyone we know?
No.
Australian fella?
Yeah.
Australian. Is he doing all right? Or?
He's great.
Good.
He's fantastic. He's brilliant and wonderful and a friend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Who broke up with who?
Mutual.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, lucky you.
Yep.
That worked out, I guess.
I mean, you know.
Just hit the wall, huh?
Hit the wall. Those things happen. Those things happen. But he had great taste in music, so.
So that's where you got into
folk? Yeah, I got fantastic music tips from him.
Do you know that British folk person? What's her name? Laura Marlin?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, I love her. I love Lucinda Williams.
She's been here.
Oh, has she? What's she like?
She's amazing.
Is she?
I love her. She's the greatest.
Really?
I wouldn't call her folk, though, but I love her.
No, I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
What would you say?
Country, rock.
Country, yeah.
And rock and roll.
Yeah. Just her voice is like.
She sang in here, yeah.
Did she?
Yeah, that was astounding because I'm a huge fan. And she told an amazing, disturbing story.
Really?
Oh, yeah, you got to listen to it.
I will listen to it.
Pretty sweet.
I know she's an interesting character and stuff.
Yeah, she's a doll. She came she's married to her manager, who's a nice guy. He's a little younger than she is, and he seems to love her. And she, she's just got a great story. Her father was a pretty intense poet, recently passed away. And it was before that. But, I was just ecstatic to have her in here.
Wow.
All right, wait. So let's go back to your amazing child stardom.
Yes. Well, hardly. Hardly. Then,
so 13, you're in the movie with Sandra Bernhard.
So I did that movie with Sandra, which kind of came and went. I didn't even know if it got a release, actually, but
I kind of had this vague memory of it, you know, being seeing it written about, and that was odd.
Okay,
did you see the movie?
I did. Yeah, I mean, years ago I saw it. Years ago I saw it. Yeah.
How are you at watching yourself?
Not great. I wish I was better because I think it's actually constructive. You know what I mean? You can watch yourself and go.
Doing that with your face.
Yeah, stop doing that, or you know, that
how about like, oh, you did a good job,
or you did a good job, or whatever. But like, it's all a bit overwhelming, and I just
I can't.
Down.
Sometimes I have to wait a year or two.
Really?
Yeah. Other times, if I do, well, usually, well, I do my show on IFC, but lately, like I can, like I'm not fundamentally an actor, but I can see I've gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
So that,
that's
enough.
Interesting. Yeah,
like,
I mean,
like I still think like could have. But I think I've gotten better.
Did you work with a coach?
No.
No.
I should have, maybe. I thought about it, but there's no time on the type of production we do. Like, there's really no time for, like, we're shooting an episode in 3 days. So there's no time for even real rehearsals.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I had a lot of input, but do you work with coaches?
I have in the past. Oh, yeah.
Well, where was the real training then? So you're 13, you do that movie, and then you're in Australia, and you're a movie person now. That's a pretty big part, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was so young, though. I was really little. But I went to this school called the Australian Theatre for Young People, or ATYP, and it's, I'm now the ambassador for, which is a great youth theatre school, really, that you go to after school and do your class. They, you know, take from 8 years old to 25 years old people.
Right.
So I did that. And then I graduated I finished high school, and I auditioned for NIDA, which is the big drama school that, you know, Mel Gibson went to and Kate. But I didn't get in. So I was devastated. And then I went to university.
What did you study there?
I did English
literature. What do you mean you didn't get into that to the school?
No.
How the fuck did that happen?
I don't know, man.
What do you mean, man?
Didn't get in, man.
So how many You did a movie and did some TV already?
Yeah.
So you had that?
I did a movie
and
did that.
And you're in Australia?
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let you in? What did you do?
I was pretty sad. So I went to university.
What did you do during your audition?
What didn't I? I think it's probably what I didn't do. I'm sure I wasn't very good. I don't know.
But yeah. You were working.
I don't think it mattered. Clearly didn't matter.
What a pompous bunch of...
No. Yeah. Well, I went to college instead.
But now you're the ambassador for that school?
No. That's a separate school. Oh. NIDA is one school. ATYP is another school.
So you went to basically a performance high school, and then you tried to get into what would be a college arts program.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah, it's like Juilliard.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and it's the Australian Juilliard.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, and they did. You know, I fuck them. And what kind of bullshit is that?
Right.
Well, you should. Well, I hope they know what's going on with you now.
I hope they do too. I hope they're listening.
Yeah, I do too.
Teachers are listening.
I'll get one email. Like, I'd like to say that I did go to that school. And what'd you have to do? Like a classical piece and a modern piece, like two pieces.
I did. Right. I think I did something from Twelfth Night, if I remember. I think I did a viola from Twelfth Night. Mm-hmm. God, I've blocked it out.
Something heavy.
Hopefully, it was something heavy to show.
Cried a little bit
to balance off the Shakespearean comedy.
I don't know how to do Shakespeare.
No,
I don't even know how to read it.
I don't know. I only really, Hamlet I studied and I love. And I actually studied Twelfth Night and The Tempest. I loved English, so I loved.
So you studied as literature, but to act them,
that's
a chore.
The language is amazing. Like
that's what I hear.
You know what I mean? He is really the greatest writer
We're making news here. Rose Byrne has decided that Shakespeare is a pretty good writer right here on my show.
Guys, Bill Shakespeare. Have you heard of him?
Awesome writer.
Bill Shakespeare.
Got a handle on the language, that fella.
Can write well.
All right, so you go to the university.
Yeah, so I went to Sydney University.
And you studied what?
I studied gender studies. And I studied English literature.
So you were bailing.
I was basically giving up.
You were.
No. You mean on acting?
Yeah.
No. So at the same time, I would audition. I did films and TV at the same time.
So do we know any of the people that you acted with? Some people that became bigger stars from the Australian talent landscape?
Yeah. I did a film when I was 19 with Heath Ledger.
Oh, yeah. How old was he? Couldn't have been much older than you.
He was 19. Yeah. We were both kids.
Which movie?
Yeah.
Which movie?
It's a really great crime caper film called Two Hands. It wasn't released here, but it was a big hit in Australia with Brian Brown and a host of brilliant Australian actors, directed and written by Gregor Jordan. And Heath was the lead, and I played his kind of love interest in the film.
And was he great?
Yeah, he was great. He was incredibly generous. He would just help you whenever he could. Like when I would come to LA, his house was open to stay, and he would always help me get auditions. And
so you guys remained friends.
We did. Yeah. So it was very obviously, real tragedy. Just a real tragedy. You know, his poor family, his little girl, and everything. But he was a very wild and spirited and kind of, guy. He was very. He lived well. Like he lived
pushed
large
it.
And
He
was shy in a way, though, Heath, like, I suppose. But he was always very generous, had a big heart.
It was a horrible loss. And it just seemed like right when he was really about to sort of take off.
I know. He'd done some incredible performances.
Oh, yeah, a couple, right?
And then he won the award posthumously. Like, very, really, very sad.
Wow. So that was early on. Now, you were in Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones.
Oh, yeah. I did that. That I still get fan mail for.
Of course you do.
If people are crazy.
Of course you do.
Talk about it.
What kind of fan? How big was your part in that? Because I'm not that big a nerd, so I did not see the movie.
I tell you, I am in that film for a minute and a half.
And you get fan mail.
And I'm behind Natalie Portman the whole time.
And you get fan mail.
And I have one line, yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Just like cards and laminated things and posters it's intense.
All from the same guy, the one guy.
Exactly, all from the same person who's got the shop where he's selling them.
And the one dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And how do you respond to that kind of thing?
I mean,
You don't.
No, I did last time. I actually did a bunch of fan mail, which was cool. Mm-hmm. I'd finally got around to doing a bunch of stuff because I was doing a play and they sent it to the theater on Broadway.
What play?
I did a play called You Can't Take It With You.
Oh, that classic play.
Yeah, the Kaufman and Hart play.
I feel like I was in that play in college.
You were. I'm sure you were. Everybody was.
There's a lot of people on stage at the end.
Yeah, it's a big cast. Big cast of people. Somebody,
is that the one where one of the relatives blows things up?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. The pinner. Yep. Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Sure.
So I did that on Broadway last year.
Did you love it?
I loved it. James L. Jones played grandfather.
Do you feel like, do you love stage acting?
I hadn't done a play since I'm 12 years, since I was like 20.
Is that something?
21 or something.
Like, let's catch up. So, the Star Wars thing, how'd you get that? Yeah. That was shot
that
there, right?
That was shot there. I just auditioned.
And you were still living there?
Yep, I was still living
there.
So,
he was casting locally?
Yep, exactly. I'm sure they had like some kind of prerequisite for tax purposes to cast Australians. But, in any case, I got to do it, which was, cool.
Did you get to engage with George Lucas?
Yeah, he was cool. He was really friendly and really cool. Lovely.
All right.
Yeah.
And when do you make the move to the States? When do you like, I'm going to... Wait a minute. I read something like, where is this? That there was another movie where you worked with Dennis Hopper.
I did. I did a film called The Night We Called It a Day. Dennis Hopper came out to do it. He played Frank Sinatra, and Melanie Griffith came out.
And that was an Australian movie?
Yeah. Was it a little Angela Edgerton? Another
was it hidden from the rest of the world? Because I've never seen it.
I don't think it came out here. I did a few movies that didn't see many audiences.
Frank Sinatra?
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
Did you hang out with him?
No, we didn't like hang out. No.
Too scary?
Just remember everybody was
scared?
Like, I was intimidated. I was young. I was 20. Ooh, I was a kid. Yeah. 21. Yeah, yeah. I was really intimidated at that point.
So when do you make the move?
I started like coming over here when I was auditioning, you know, in my like 1920, but just come over for 3 months here, 3 months there, and audition. And then I eventually got this job called Wicker Park. So I did that. And then I did this film Troy, which is like a big sandals and sword epic with Brad Pitt and Orlando Bloom and Wolfgang Petersen directed
it. How big was your part in that?
It was cool. It was a good part. I played Briseis. Who is a Greek and gets captured by the Trojans, and she's, you know, becomes basically Brad Pitt's like slave. You know?
Nice. So you got to work with
and
Brad.
Then they fall in love and get together. Yeah,
they fell in love with Brad.
The characters do. You know, they get together.
I understand. That was not a moron.
Yeah. Just clarifying.
Yeah.
Just clarifying.
So you don't like Brad Pitt is what you're saying.
I hated him. Yeah. I just hated him. I mean, what a awesome. No, he was cool, man. He was cool. I was young. I was pretty shy. And we filmed that in Malta for a long time.
So you're on set for a long time.
Waiting in the hotel
for
a long
time.
Was it
pretty, though? Pretty, right?
Malta's pretty. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. Yeah,
so there was
pretty.
It was all on kind of location-ish, you know, big
pretty
sets.
Pretty much, yeah. Malta's got all these incredible ruins and things that, I mean, it's a very popular place to film.
Was he nice to work with? I mean, when you talk about Heath Ledger as being generous or being, what kind of actor is Brad Pitt to play
Brad's
against?
Brad's really mellow. Like, he's laid back and he's easy, you know, and he's creative in a really particular way. Like, he's very curious, and he had a lot of ideas about things, and he was, and just cool with respected actors. So it was really interesting.
It's interesting that you can't, like, there's certain things in terms of movie stars that you can't really account for, that like, there's no, you know, they're just born that way. Mm-hmm. You know, who the hell knows?
Yeah.
You know, whatever he's doing, you know, when he gets on screen, you're like, no, that's Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of movie stars.
Yeah, I know. There are, right?
There's a lot of actors.
Yeah, and there's only a handful that have that kind of transcend to that.
It's kind of bizarre because it's complete, it's like models, you know, so it's just this natural phenomenon if they can find it.
Yeah, it's really true. No, I know. And he, you know, I was just working with Susan Sarandon. I'm doing film shooting out here with her.
Really?
Yeah, and she's, you know, has she been here?
No. I've interviewed her when I did a radio show on Air America. I interviewed when they were together, the both of them.
Oh, cool.
She knows me.
Oh, cool.
You can say hi.
I will. She's, you know.
I'd like to get her in here.
She's dynamite. She's great.
She's great.
She's just brilliant.
Marie Antoinette, you were in that. I saw that movie.
Yeah, I have a really fun little part in that, playing the Duchess de Polignac.
Did you have fun dressing up?
It was fun. I got to wear some costumes that Marissa Berenson wore in Barry Lyndon.
You did?
Yeah, because Milena Cananero was the costume designer who's won, you know,
and she
multiple
just pulled them
Oscars.
Out?
And I
she
wore
still
some.
Had them?
Yeah, I guess she still had them in the files or, you know, in the archives.
That's crazy.
Yeah, these gorgeous.
That's an insane movie.
Yeah, Barry amazing Lyndon. Movie. Yeah.
It's really like it's funny in parts.
Yeah.
Even. Yeah. So Sofia Coppola was fun.
Yeah, it was Sofia. She was cool. She was very gentle director, very like easy, gentle, a lot of improvising, very like, you know, fluid filmmaking. It was cool. Yeah, it was fun. And Jamie Dornan was in that. Jamie Dornan, who is now the star of 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, good.
He was in that.
Thank God.
He's a lovely guy. He's a
How's
he's
that?
A
is that 50 Shades? Did that open? Did it come and go? Is it done? Is it?
That was a huge hit.
It was?
Yeah, big hit.
How could it not be?
How exactly?
I guess there's a lot of women in this country that don't realize that porn is available.
Well, I mean, or Anais Nin. Yeah. I don't know.
Go way back. Go all the way back. Do whatever you I don't know. I'm being condescending, and I'd have no idea what the book is about, nor do I know what the movie was about.
Right.
Did you see it?
I was traveling back from Australia once, and both women on either side of me were reading the book, and the stewardess, and the women in front of me.
But is it romance or is it filth?
So I did read it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I read it. And it's...
A hybrid? Is it romantic
it's a
filth?
Hybrid. It's a hybrid.
Romantic filth.
I would
filth.
Say it's a hybrid. Okay. Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
So it's almost filth. So it's not quite porn. It's just above porn for some reason. Not that I have any problem. I have no problem with porn. I'm not judging it.
I guess I'm not that up on my porn, so I can't really compare.
Well, it's not. Is it romantic? Or is it just sexual?
No. It's romantic. It's absolutely romantic. Yeah. It's a classic story of, you know, dark, daring suitor and the young virginal woman and blah, blah, blah. So I'll get you a copy.
Sounds good to me.
I'll send you
a copy. I'll pick one up.
I'll get you a Kindle.
Yeah. Will you? I have a Kindle. We'll just download it after this. I'll give you some music. You can give me the 50 Shades of Grey. You can help me download that.
Boom.
So you've done a shitload of movies. The X-Men movies are big. You must get some fan mail for that.
I do, yeah.
Same guy from the Star Wars.
Exactly, probably, the fanboys.
Yeah, they're
the fanboys.
The nerds. They love you? Are you a nerd goddess?
They give... I think because I'm not a mutant in those X-Men films, I've really escaped a lot of attention.
You fly... you're the... What is your
I'm
part?
The,
What's
well,
her name? Moira?
Moira McTaggart. She's a CIA agent, operative. Yeah. And so she has this relationship with Charles Xavier.
Uh-huh.
And so... She flies planes, and she actually causes his injury in the one that, you know, she made
oh, really?
Him paraplegic in the one that...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And that's right out of the comic, or what?
Are they all different? I believe so. I'm not sure. We had an incredible guy come in on set one day with, like, all the comics, you know, a real fanboy, and he was showing me all of Moira's history and blah, blah, blah. And they're kind of endless.
They just
let
that guy on the set? What do you mean he just came on the set?
No, I mean, you know, they sourced him out, the production, and he came on, and any question we had about these characters.
They found a guy whose job was it to be a deep nerd, a deep X-Men nerd.
Yeah.
And they're like, we've got the deepest X-Men nerd in the country.
Yep.
He's coming in with the stuff.
Yep. He came in.
And he came in?
He came in.
Was he, on top of his game?
He was beyond on top of his... I mean, he had... Because the thing is with those comics, the stories are crazy. I mean, they go into, like, parallel universes, and then they change identities, and then they come back, and then they die, and then they're reborn, and then they're a man and a woman, and then they have powers, and then they don't, and then they have a child, and the child turns into the sun, and then the sun rules the planet, they blow up, and then, the Trojans from that planet turn into apes that then become, you know, it's like Scientology. It's like totally...
I don't know, but I think I'll send that little clip of you saying that to you, and you can maybe publish Maybe you could give that to a comic book writer and say, I think I came up with this spontaneously on Marin's show. I was riffing.
What do you think?
We've got a full mythology here.
I mean, it's really that complicated. Like, I
know.
Was like, what? So I think they just pick out strands of stuff from these universes of these stories and
figure out which ones to mash it up into a movie.
Yeah,
I never got into them, those comic books. Later in life, I got into some of the more.
Which ones?
Hellblazer, Sandman, Swamp Thing I liked.
Yeah.
But I was never a superhero person.
Do you like any of the films? Any of the kind of franchises that are around?
I haven't really jumped in. You know, I think I saw Iron Man. I think I saw that. I think I saw Iron Man 1 and 2 for some reason. And I saw, I liked it. You know, it's okay. It's fun.
Did you like the Christopher Nolan trilogy, The Dark Knight?
Oh, yeah. I saw those. Yeah, I like those. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some of them are better than others. You know, I it was interesting because I was watching, I don't know if it was the last one, and it reminded me that I met Michael Keaton and I had to have him on the show. I wanted to have him on the show. And because I was watching one of Nolan's, I was like, I got to. I hadn't reached out to Michael Keaton in like a year.
Wow. Did he come on?
He did.
Oh, cool.
But it was like the next day or something. He's like, I'm in town now.
Oh, cool.
What are you doing now? What's going on tomorrow? You can be around tomorrow. He just came over like at 7 at night. So, all right, what are we doing?
So that's good.
It was great.
Keep you on your toes.
It was great to talk to the first Batman.
The original.
He was a good Batman.
That was a great film. I loved that original one.
Yeah, so did he.
Kim Basinger and Jack Nicholson. Yeah,
Nicholson.
But the Christopher Nolan series is, I think, so really deep. Brilliant and sort of,
good.
You know, raised the bar for the genre.
And then you were on Damages Forever. And that was a big job, right? That was
huge
like the biggest job you had.
Big break.
People loved that thing. And it was sort of it was one of those weird TV shows where it's sort of like, canceled. No, it's not. It's back. It's half canceled. No, we're just moving it to a thing.
We're just moving it to this obscure network, but we're still going. We're still on it. We're still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had 5 seasons, 3 on FX, 2 on DirecTV. But it was a big break for me. I was 27, moved to New York, got this show opposite Glenn Close.
Yeah.
And I'd never done cable television before, and like a long-running show, not since I'm 15. I did a show in Australia for, you know, a soap for about a year. So it's hard work. I mean, the hours that that you clock as an actor on those shows is like intense. You work 17, 18-hour days. It's really, the crew
is exhausted. But you got to work with...
But I got to work with Glenn.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's Glenn Close.
And that, what was the whole, it was sort of a sordid bit of business. What was the angle of that show?
Yeah, I'm a young, very naive lawyer who comes to work for her, and she's only employing me because I have information. And she's a very duplicitous, sort of shady woman in a way. She does a lot of things out of line, out of off book to get her case done. But she's generally, usually is trying to do the right thing, but she does a lot of bad things to do the right thing.
Are your folks still alive?
Mm-hmm.
Are they proud of you?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so.
Do they go see your stuff?
Yeah, they do. They do. Oh, yeah. They try to. Yeah, because they're in Tasmania. It's pretty remote.
Is there a horse track in Tasmania?
No, he doesn't really go to the track anymore. He just listens on the radio. Betfair.com.
Oh, so he does it online.
Betfair.com. Yep.
So he just sits there and does that.
Yes.
Compulsively.
And he has garlic farm.
He's a garlic farm?
Yeah, he has a beautiful, I'll show you a photo. He's got great garlics. He's entered a few competitions. There's an annual competition in Tasmania for
garlic.
He's
a competitive garlic grower?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does he ever send you garlic?
Yeah. No, he doesn't because I'm over here. Sorry.
You can't send
garlic?
I don't
think it'll get through customs. Yeah.
But do you go visit them?
Yeah, I was just there over the summer and they're really good with food and everything's very fresh. And so he cooks for me constantly when I'm there.
With garlic? A lot of garlic.
A lot of garlic. No vampires in that house. No.
Does he pickle it or anything like that?
No. Maybe he does. He hasn't told me. I don't think so.
I've only had that once anyways. It's kind of heavy.
Was it nice?
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's like eating a whole clove of garlic. Just because it's sitting in vinegar doesn't mean it's going to be any less.
Give you a little, me
knock
a little
you out.
Stomach ache if I eat too much garlic.
Yeah, yeah. And you think it's good for you and maybe it's good for you.
It is.
Is it?
Yes.
I mean, is there science on that? Or?
It's got a lot of antioxidants in it.
Fine.
Don't quote me on that.
So, all right, let's get into the more recent stuff.
Yeah,
in that.
Cool.
How'd you get locked in with these comic people?
I was very lucky. I kept badgering my agent saying I'd love to do comedy, and all I really was known for is Damages and Troy, which were kind of very heavy films and television show. So I finally started getting some auditions, and then I went in and read for Get Him to the Greek that Judd Apatow was producing, and Nick Stoller was the writer-director.
He's been in here.
Has he been in here?
Yeah.
He's awesome, right? So
He's a sweet guy.
He's
a sweet guy.
He gave me my break. And they knew Damages a little bit, so...
That was sort of his break, too.
He did Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But they took a chance, you know. Yeah. Damages wasn't a comedy, and that's where they knew me from. And they were like, sure.
So him and Judd were sitting there, and they decided...
Judd wasn't in the room. I think it was just... It was Nick Stoller, and I've sort of blurred it out. It's online, my audition.
It is?
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
They film it and they post. I mean, Russell's is online. Mine's online. You
they
know,
post it during the promotion?
Moss is online. Maybe they do. I don't know what the, you know, why how they roll it out.
Right.
But like, so.
And so that was the first real comedy.
That was my break.
The big comedy.
Yep.
And then you did Bridesmaids after that?
Yeah, and that, you know, they had seen me in that, Judd, and he was producing this, and I read for that, and I got Bridesmaids. So I was really very lucky to be, you know.
Right, and then you did Neighbors, which was pretty huge.
Yeah, we did Neighbors.
The Internship, which was not so huge.
It
So there were a lot of signs around
that's
that remained
right,
around.
The ghosts.
And you did The Place Beyond the Pines, which was heavy as fuck.
Yeah.
I love that fucking movie.
It's a cool movie. I have a tiny part, but it was really cool. I played Bradley's wife. And
yeah, it's brief, right?
Yeah, super brief. I have like three scenes. But
Derek when he was really a cop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not when he became like mayor or whatever. We still
no he so it's sort of yeah it's the second half of the film and he's a cop and then he gets shot
right
injured and then he does and then he starts running for mayor
right yeah. So you yeah. you were there like when he was home convalescing
exactly.
right
exactly
I remember
yep.
yeah
yeah
now I thought
yeah.
that movie was very kind of
did you like it
I did like it it was pretty to look at it's like and it was an interesting structure.
Yeah, he's yeah. a really interesting filmmaker. I loved Blue Valentine,
uh-huh.
and he's just done another really interesting film called...
What's his name?
Derek Cianfrance.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like a real artist guy.
Yeah, he's really, yeah, he's really talented.
So the spy thing is going to happen.
Yeah, so Spy comes out in June.
X-Men Apocalypse is going to happen.
Yeah.
I went to your wiki, and they have not put Adult Beginners on there.
Haven't they?
No.
How do I get in touch with them?
I don't know who does it. Maybe I mean, talk to your publicist.
My name was incorrect on IMDb for a long time. They had my name as Rose Judith Esther Byrne.
What?
I know. I was like...
But what's your dream, man? What do you want to... Like, what would be the role of... What, I mean, what
you
do
you... know, I would just love, strive to work with directors I admire.
And
I
who do you
love,
want to work with?
I mean, I'd love to work with Derek again. That was really, you know, inspiring, challenging experience. I love David Lynch. I'm a big Lynch fan. I love.
Can you get
films.
Weird? How weird can you get?
Well, I would, you know.
You'd do it for him, right?
I'd love to do that. I think he's so.
So you like heavy shit. You do like it.
Well, but I've it's been great doing some sure. comedy because sure. that's been something I've.
But to challenge yourself.
Oh yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Do you feel like you've nailed it or what?
Nailed
like,
the challenge?
Being an actress?
Oh, no. Are you kidding? Not at all. Not at all. No.
Are you worried?
Always.
Yeah? But you're doing okay, right?
I have nothing to complain about. But I think the, you know, general sort of artists.
Sure. Oh, what's your biggest fear, though, really?
Ennui, I think yeah. it just sure. drives you a little bit.
Sure, you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Well, yeah. you know, you're doing, you know, like you found, you know, you've hit your stride at an age where, you know, most actresses are like, am I going to work anymore?
It's true. I mean, it's yeah. true. No, it's a good point. It's absolutely true. No, I've had great few last years of working consistently on interesting stuff. But, you know, fuck, man.
Yeah.
It's like, can you swear on this show?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, of course.
but.
Well, now you got to do it.
You know.
What were you going to say, fuck,
well,
man?
Well, I was just said fuck, man.
Yeah, good.
You know, like, it's. Yeah. You just have to keep perspective on it, you know.
I think you want to do more stage. That's mm-hmm. what I think.
Is that what you say when you look into my eyes?
I more think stage? like some heavy stage.
No, I think I'm probably more strong in comedic
movies?
Stuff, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've found, even though I think it's more challenging.
What if
really,
you're like, don't you want to be like a, play evil fucking?
Well, in Spy, I have a really great evil character.
Because like even in Bridesmaids, she was just insecure and over the top in terms of her pomposity.
Yeah.
But it was a fragile character.
Yeah.
But I'd absolutely. Like to see you be terrifying.
Yeah. In Spy, she's like that. She's.
It's a comedy though,
truly
no?
doesn't. It's a comedy. It is a comedy. No, it's a comedy, but it's taken very seriously for a comedy. So it's like my character is, she's just absolutely just doesn't care about anybody else but herself. And there's no sort of concept of a consequence for her. Mm. You know, it's very, she's totally, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that was fun. That was fun to play a truly evil person.
And Feig's great. He's a sweet guy.
He's the greatest.
Yeah.
And he's, I mean, not to get, he's what? He's such a champion of women, you know, like he breaks every convention. Like, he's so smart like that. And when I went and met him at FICO recently, he's like, you know, we want to make female-driven films with action and comedy. And that's sort of, he's doing exactly what he said.
Well, I think it's important. It has to happen.
It has to happen.
What
it
do you,
has to happen.
You studied gender in college? What was that must yeah. have been like at the beginning of the massive gender studies. What was the angle on that?
We read Foucault.
Sure.
And we, you know, looked at that stuff and the myth of gender, like gender sort of technically being a myth, uh-huh. like the and how it developed and
patriarchy. Did you read about the patriarchy, like yeah. the how the whole thing is stilted against
right
women?
Oh sure, yeah totally. I've been reading The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan. I know, which is a very old text, but
oh yeah,
I've been reading that, which is, you know, really interesting.
Yeah.
And so Yeah, and it's just still really rife. So it's someone like Paul Feig, who is just interested in just like smashing all those walls paying attention to it, is really
refreshing. I thought Bridesmaids was genius.
Thank you.
You were great. Everybody was great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was
hilarious.
Weirdly, didn't realize, I'm very naive, I didn't realize like that it would be such a, you know, disgust point of the fact that it was all women being funny. I really didn't realize that when we started doing the press tour. That was, everyone was like, wow, who knew all these women were so funny?
Yeah, Americans forget that.
It's amazing. But not just Americans, it was all over the world. We went to England and Ireland and Australia and, you know, I'm sure they didn't say that to the guys in The Hangover. Like, wow, you guys are funny. That's
weird.
Yeah,
you guys are really, you know, like, funny. Like, who knew that guys, little short guys with beards and doofuses who put tattoos on their face were hilarious?
Yeah, it's like, I'm sure they didn't say that to them. So it'd be great the day that we don't have to say it at all. Like, that it's just...
You say it, sister.
I will. I will, brother. I will.
All right, I got to get you out of here, I guess, to honor your other commitment.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Where do you got to go?
Oh, very dull, but I have a commitment this evening that my friend's coming over at like 6:30 and we're going out together.
Oh, yeah? For dinner?
To a dinner.
Fancy? Yeah. To someone's house?
To like a dinner in a, where is it? It's in like Barney's.
Oh, yeah? The restaurant?
Yes.
Oh, so it's an event.
Yes.
You're going to an event.
Don't make me feel guilty about it.
And you're going to get all dolled up.
No, this is it.
No, come on.
This is it. You're lying. I'll put on like a different outfit.
A dress. You can wear a dress.
Yeah, maybe a frock.
No, you can wear a black dress.
A frock.
You can wear a black dress. I know what's happening.
Are you going to an event tonight? Where are you going?
I'm
going
to go play guitar at a place.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where?
At the Baked Potato.
Cool.
Well, it's nice talking to you.
Yeah, lovely to talk to you.
And best of luck with this movie.
Thank you. Thank you for watching.
And all your success.
All your success to you as well. I hope I can come back again.
No, there's no way. No one. First of all, I never do. I never have people come back unless I really like them.
Really?
And help them promote something. And, you know, generally people who have to go to, you know, leave early, can't schedule properly.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's how I am. Yeah. So you just know. Yeah, well, you can come back anytime. Oh. Even if I'm not here, feel free. Just
thank you.
All right, so I'm gonna say goodbye, Rose.
All right.
Well, that's it. That was a lovely chat. She's lovely to look at and talk to, that woman, and talented as well. So I'm in a hotel room, just gonna hang out. Go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs. Get on that mailing list. I'll mail you a little something every Monday. What else? You know, get some JustCoffee.coop. I went there. Did I tell you that? I went over to JustCoffee.coop, saw their new operation. It's in a building that used to be a roller rink. Big operation. They got both machines going. They used to just have the convection roaster, but now they got the drum roaster as well. So their dark coffees are probably resonating much better, and which is fortunate because they're doing that in the drum, I think, now. And my coffee's a dark coffee, so this is the way it's supposed to be done. They're full spectrum over there now. Big operations. Nice to meet everybody over at JustCoffee.coop. You know, I knew Moon and a couple other people. There's Mike Moon, who runs the joint. Well, it's a co-op, so I don't want to lay any sort of heavy leadership qualities on any of the members. But it's great to be over there. Great to drink coffee at the source. Nice to do something in Madison. Go to WTFpod.com/calendar and check out the dates. Because I honestly, if I'm coming near you, you should come near me. Because these have been good shows. All right? There's no guitar here in the room. I got no guitar. Boomer lives!
Ready to pop the question?
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.